today I'm going to be talking about a computational technique that allows one to obtain results essentially for quantum quenches in the thermodynamic limit. And this is going to be for generic lattice Hamiltonians. Okay, so I'm going to be giving you a lot of details, and you see there are only 32 slides, so we have plenty of time for discussions. Okay, so the first thing is that, well, this is the outline. It will be an introduction about quantum quenches, general approaches to deal with many body quantum systems in lattices. And then I'm going to discuss this technique that will be the main subject of my talk, and then some results for an actual quench in a one-dimensional system. Okay. So, and the first thing is that I'm going to be talking about these sudden quenches. So essentially the idea is one has some initial state, it's an eigenstate of some Hamiltonian or just something that you created by hand, and then you evolve that state with a time-independent Hamiltonian. Okay. So that's the first constraint for my calculation. Now, these quantum quenches are very interesting. They show us teach us a lot of things about systems far from equilibrium, and they are also essentially relevant to experiments. And this is one of those experiments in a cold atom setting in which they essentially prepare some state, okay, in one-dimensional lattice, in which they use a very strong super lattice to create a state in which there are sites that are empty and sites that are occupied, essentially with probability close to 100 for each of them. And then they let the system evolve with a translational invariant, or essentially no super lattice, both Hauer Hamiltonian. And you can see this is experimental result for the occupancy of the odd sides. It started being zero, and you see there is some dynamics, and then essentially you see that it relaxes to something that is around 0.5, which is what you expect. And then in the experiment, they could also study the momentum distribution function, which is interesting. Initially, there was no structure, and then with time, there was some structure. So essentially, you see that these quenches, they are relevant to experiments, and you can see interesting stuff. Actually, let me show you some results we obtained many years earlier on essentially similar setting of what happens if you study a quenching, where you turn off the super lattice, but instead of starting with this trivial insulating state, you start with a superfluid. Okay, let me just tell you a second what are the details of this system so that you can appreciate why the results are non-trivial. So essentially, this is a lattice, okay, with period A. So there is a lattice, an underlying lattice. And then on top of it, there is another lattice, which we call a super lattice, with period 4A. Okay, so see that this is going to be essentially periodic now with 4A. And this is the density, the site occupancies in the lattice. And this is the momentum. And you see the Bragg peaks that correspond to that periodicity, okay? So now suppose you turn off the lattice as they did in the experiments, what do you expect to happen? So if this would be a generic system, essentially you expect that this is going to relax to a constant density, and then the momentum distribution function will go to something that looks thermal. And thermal for a system without a super lattice is essentially one peak in the center of the system, broadened because you have some energy, okay? Now let's see what happens if you do that for an integrable system. This was a case of Harcourt bosons. This is what happens. So the density can actually be calculated analytically, and you will eventually get that it relaxes power law to something that is constant. But look at what happens with the momentum distribution. So essentially, this system remembers that it came from something that had peaks at these values. And even you wait as much as you want, essentially the system after relaxation, you immediately see that cannot be thermal because there is no super lattice here, but you have these extra peaks. Okay, so interesting thing happens, and now what we want to do, this we can study for very large systems if the systems are integrable, but we are interested in what happens in generic models. So this was a one-dimensional Harcourt boson lattice system that we can solve exactly. Okay, so essentially the talk is about how one can really get these kind of things for any generic model in 1, 2, 3 dimensions. So, okay, so what is the idea? So the idea is that we have some unitary dynamics. So we start with some initial state that is not an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian that is driving the dynamics, and energy is conserved because the evolution is gonna be unitary. And then obviously there is the question of what is that we're gonna call thermalization in this setting, because the density matrix, I mean, there will never be a mixed density matrix. You always have some quantum state that is evolving unitarily. And then we focus essentially in observables, like I was showing you before, the distribution of site occupancy, momentum occupancies. And then essentially we want to answer whether these observables thermalize, so essentially whether they relax to something that is time, essentially almost time independent, so one can calculate some time average. and then essentially describe it with some ensemble of statistical mechanics, either microcanonical, canonical, or grand canonical. And then there is the usual calculation you can do. Essentially, you can always write the initial state in the eigenstate of the Hamiltonians, plug it here, and you have an exact expression for the evolution of the observables. And essentially, the problem here is that this double sum goes over an exponentially large number of states, so you can, in general, not calculate that for large systems. But essentially, if you think that this the system relaxes something states close to it, you can compute the infinite time average, this expression, and then all the, essentially, you assume that there are no degeneracies, the off-diagonal terms drop away, and you get some result here that is what we call the diagonal ensemble. That depends on the initial state through these C alphas, which are the projection of this initial state into the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, okay? And then the question is whether this can be equal to some thermal result, okay? So now, here is the first place where sudden quench and locality will play a role, okay? So we usually deal with Hamiltonians that are some of local terms, and that's very important for defining this question of whether the system can thermalize. So suppose that we start with some initial state that is an eigenstate of this Hamiltonian H naught, okay? And now we suddenly do this quenching, which we change the new Hamiltonian is H naught plus a sum of local terms. And now the question that we want to ask is what happens with the width of the weighted energy density after the quench, okay? And we want to ask that question because in thermal ensembles, we know that that width with respect to the width of the full spectrum goes to zero. So if that's something finite, then it doesn't even make sense to try to compare what you have after the quench with thermal ensembles because you know in thermal ensemble is going to zero, so you are sampling states with an energy that is essentially the mean energy of the system, okay? So, and this in this setting can be easily done. I mean, this is the definition. By writing the Hamiltonian like this, it becomes this summing here. And by writing this essentially perturbation, or it can be something large, what changed the Hamiltonian, so you get this expression. And then immediately you see what's gonna happen. So essentially, if your initial state doesn't have long-range correlation in these terms that you've used to do the quench, you have this double sum. One of the sum is gonna be truncated after some number of terms. And then the other one will give you something that is proportional to the number of Lattice sites, but you have the square root here. So this delta is proportional to the square root of the volume, the number of particles of the system. And essentially, the important thing is that this is the square root because you know that the width of the full energy spectrum is gonna be proportional to the volume of the system. So essentially, this ratio is gonna go to zero as one over the square root of n. And this is what you have for typical, essentially for statistical mechanics. So that's good. So the question is well-defined, but that doesn't answer. That doesn't tell you whether the system thermalizes or not. As a matter of fact, I just show you a case in which it doesn't, okay? And all this was satisfied. This is valid for integrable, non-integrable, as long as you have this sum of local terms, okay? So now, to see whether system thermalizes or not, we usually do numerical experiments, okay? So, and then we are interested in what happens when the system is integrable. I showed you before, there is no thermalization, and what happens when the system is not integrable, and is there a difference between those two? So, a good setting to study this in one dimension, this XXC, extended XXC model, so you can think of them as hardcore boson or spinless fermions, with nearest neighbor hopping and interaction. So this part is integrable, this is the XXC model, and then this part breaks integrability, okay? So, and now one can start with some state, for example, in the non-integrable case in which this T and B prime, T prime, B prime are different from zero. So we start with some initial state with some momentum distribution. For example, this is the momentum, the population of the momentum modes is momentum. So you have some initial state, it's not an eigenstate, do a quench, and then you get this time average that I told you before, you get this red line. And if you do a calculation using a thermal ensemble, in this case it was a microcanonical ensemble, you get something that is very close. So that's kind of good news. So because it's just telling you, it's hinting that the system is gonna thermalize, okay? So, and actually if we study different system sizes, we see that those differences that you see in here, they essentially decrease with increasing system size. So this case was one third. One third, right.
So you quench from a superfluid to a superfluid.
You quench from a superfluid. But in any case, as it was said at the very introduction of this conference, so since you put a lot of energy in the system, you are away from the low energy sector. So you are really sampling what's happening with the states that are at high energy. And those are, yeah, just thermal states. Okay, yeah.
Is it correct for any value of T prime and pre prime, even if they're very?
No, I'm gonna, yeah, I'm actually not, I'm gonna be discussing this with this new approach. So what happens as you, this T prime, B prime becomes very small, okay? And essentially for finite systems, all we find is that this difference increase, okay? But then you increase system size and then they decrease. And then there's always this funny limit of going to zero and going to the thermodynamic limit, okay? Now, if you do the same for an integrable case in which T prime, B prime are zero, these are the hardcore bosons I showed you before, essentially, you compute, and this we can do for much larger system sizes because that's not exact normalization as this. Then you get the time average, let's say this blue curve at long times. And if you look at the thermal, they are different. Okay, and now you change system size, and the difference don't change. So they are essentially different in the thermodynamic limit. And but then one can modify statistical mechanics. You already heard this word GGE, and then if you do that, then you get a perfect description. Okay. This one is also B zero. That's true. But all you need to integrate for to have integrability is T prime and B prime to be zero. But this one indeed has also this B zero. Okay. So and then the question is what is different between these two systems, right? And why is it that the first one thermalized? And then some people were already thinking about that, or people have been thinking about that for many years, probably since the birth of quantum mechanics. But there were some very interesting works in the early 90s in which they essentially concluded that that if the eigenstate expectation value of observables, right, they are smooth function of the energy, so there are no fluctuations between eigenstates that are essentially within the microcanonical window, then one can have thermalization in general. Okay, and they could show that this happens in systems that are like classically chaotic, or if you perturb integrable system with some special like random models. Okay, so and then we've essentially checked that in using numerical experiments. So what I'm showing you here is what happens now for the eigenstate expectation value of this quantity, the zero momentum occupation, as a function of the energy. So here you have the full spectrum of all the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. And what you see is if you move away from the edge, where funny thing happens, so you see it becomes something that is very smooth, and then you find that the width of this distribution essentially decreases as you increase system size, right? So now if you go to the integrable limit, you see a completely different picture. So you see something that is very broad, and now as you increase system size, this width doesn't go to zero. Essentially what you get is like more states in between, okay? Right.
You can prove eigenstate thermalization hypothesis everything.
That's true.
And
yeah.
You can formulate it for atoms, but basically this for the largest, I don't know, a complex system which people.
Right. Yeah, I mean. The credits, I think, yeah, it's a more complicated story. I think here, what I think that this guy realized is that you really have to focus on the observables. So these are the important quantities that you shouldn't be worrying about, you know, essentially ensembles, and because ultimately you know that they will be observables, I mean, in principle, not physically relevant, that won't thermalize, right? So there are things that that you can calculate that will never thermalize, okay? So if you try to prove things for in general, it's just not going to work, right? Like an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, you know that the population of the eigenstates is not something that is going to thermalize, right? So. Right, so yeah, we can put them there, okay. So, okay. Yeah. Right, this is just the weighted energy densities, just that you see what is the canonical, the microcanonical, and the exact.
The red line corresponds to the
this is the pure, yeah, the overlaps.
Fairly broad,
as I will show you now with results in the thermodynamic limit, these things, they depend on the quench. Okay, yeah.
But is there any sense in the integral case that these tails that seem to be there, you understand? No, on the other side.
Here. No, this is all going to go to zero in the thermodynamic limit. That's just what I showed you before. Okay, this is just because it's finite. But that's essentially what I show analytically, right? So the width is going to go to zero with respect to the width of the entire spectrum, no matter whether it's integral or not.
But how it goes to zero, does that change between integral and
non-integral? No, it's essentially, in general, it's going to be 1 over the square root of the volume. Okay, yeah, that's not going to change. Okay, so that's good. So essentially, it's telling us, I mean, there may be thermalization or there may not, depending whether the system is integrable or not. But then that's not enough. I mean, essentially, all we've said is that this time average can be thermal or not, depending on whether one is integral or not. But one also needs relaxation, right? So, I mean, you need that the system, the observables, become something that is almost time independent with a small fluctuations. You have something that is hugely fluctuating. You will never say that the system has essentially thermalized or relaxed. And then if we do the numerical experiments, we get that indeed that's what happens. So essentially fluctuations are small. So what I'm showing you here is the plot of the difference between the structure factor at each time and the prediction of this infinite time average properly normalized as a function of time. Okay, for quenches, you see this is away from integrability and this as you approach to the integrable point. And what you see in all of them, you see some large drop at short times and then after the system just fluctuates. And you see this is with increasing system size, both the fluctuations and the mean of the fluctuations decrease. And essentially in the thermodynamic limit, what you expect is just this becomes zero. Okay?
Are there any examples where the expectation
value is correct for the fluctuations? Yeah, there are. I mean, and in particular in integrable models, the Calogero-Sutherland model, I mean, essentially this is one that will always fluctuate. And actually, in this case, you get that the diagonal ensemble describes the time average, but there is never relaxation. This is because it's very special. I mean, it's a super integrable like model, yeah. But in general, you get the relaxation. And probably Lea is going to be talking about that. So, okay, and there are theorems actually for generic systems and for non-interacting systems that tell you that that should happen in general, okay? So, and the question is, why is that happening? And usually with one thing is because of defacing. So essentially, you know that fluctuations are related to the off-diagonal matrix elements. But if you go through the defacing argument, you essentially get that fluctuations are of the order of typical off-diagonal matrix elements. I told you that the mean average are of the order of the typical diagonal. So if you want this to be, the fluctuations to be much smaller than the means, you need the essentially the diagonal to be much larger than the off-diagonals. And this is what happens. Okay, so essentially, you see, the whole picture is consistent, but all the results I've shown you essentially for generic systems are essentially from exact normalization for small lattices, okay? And the question is always, well, what happens when you increase the lattice? But we see that this diagonal ensemble is something useful, okay? Essentially, relaxation brings you there, and usually you are gonna stay there. But so far, we haven't known there are no known methods to use that, to essentially do statistical mechanics on the diagonal ensemble. And this is essentially the subject of my talk, how to do statistical mechanics on the diagonal ensemble, okay? So, but now let's step back and say, well, what methods do we have to deal with generic many-body system even when you are in equilibrium? And actually, you see that even in thermal equilibrium, many-body systems are very tough, right?
So you mentioned that the off-diagonal elements have to be small. Does the off-diagonal matrix element carry any information about what are the time scale of relaxation?
That's correct.
Is there a classification of ETH where one can also talk about the hydrodynamic behavior in the thermal space, which yeah. would characterize different classes in terms of the off-diagonal matrix elements?
Right. No, so the first question is whether there is information, and there is. As a matter of fact, the time scale for relaxation has to do with the width. I mean, it's a bit more complicated that, I mean, I don't have time to go into the details, but the off-diagonals, they can decompose into some smooth part and some fluctuated part, and that smooth part has a width, okay? And that width determines these time scales. Okay, and that will depend on the observable. Even for the same model, you can have different time scales. But I'm not going to be discussing this here. Okay. Okay. So now let's see what do we have to deal with many-body quantum systems in thermal equilibrium. Okay. So the first thing, if you are going to solve a many-body quantum system that is in equilibrium, that comes to your mind is quantum Monte Carlo. And this is essentially the best you can do. So if you can do quantum Monte Carlo, don't do anything else, because this scales in polynomial time. You can do very large system and find a size scale, okay? So, but the problem of quantum Monte Carlo is that there is a sign problem. So essentially there are many interesting models, frustrating models that you cannot solve. And that's what really bothers you. And remember, I'm gonna be talking in generic dimensions. So in infinite dimensions or in one dimension, there are other models that are probably better, other methods that are better. Okay, so what else can you do? You can always do exact normalization. That's what we've been doing. And you see a lot of red in here, exponential problems, small system, finite size effects. And if you are in dimension higher than one, there is no systematic way to extrapolate to the thermodynamic limit, okay? Because you have only very few clusters that you can calculate. But they can be used for any model. Now, the other thing that you can do is high temperature expansions. Those are, again, an exponential problem, and they are restricted to high temperatures, but they are already results in the thermodynamic limit, and there are some extrapolations, Padé approximants, to get lower temperatures. So, and essentially can be used for any model. Now, one thing that was bothering us for some time many years ago was that these high temperature expansion, they can fail at low temperatures, even when you have correlation that are short range. So even if you have an insulating model, you cannot go below, I don't know, the temperature scale of the gap, okay? So essentially that was a problem. And well, there are these other methods that work in infinite dimensions or in one dimension, and you can do better, yeah.
But high temperature expansion would only make sense if the infinite temperature limit is simple.
It's simple, that's
not
correct.
Always the case for these systems, is it?
Well, for translational invariant systems, is in general, I mean, if you don't have something like many body localizations, so on, yeah, it's in generally the case. It's trivial. So, okay, so now let me tell you, because essentially my talk is about a hybrid between these two guys in here, okay? So exact normalization and high temperature expansion. So how do, and essentially the base of high temperature expansion is this link cluster expansion theorem that tells you, and this is for a translational invariant system, it tells you that if you are interested in some observable that is extensive, and you wanna get obviously in the thermodynamic limit, what you care is about that observable per side, so the intensive part, the other one is infinite. So you can always calculate it as the sum, okay, of something that are called these lattice constants. It's something that has to do with the lattice times the weight of the observable in a cluster. So you see, this C are the clusters that you can embed. This L is the lattice constant for that cluster, and this is the weight of the observable, okay? So here is where the physics part comes. In here, it's just defined by the geometry of the lattice, okay? And now this weight, how they are computed by the inclusion-exclusion principle. It tells you that the weight is the observable in the cluster minus the weight of all the subclusters of that cluster, okay? And obviously the idea, this is calculated recursively, because in a lattice, then you start with one side doesn't have a subcluster, so the weight and the observable are the same thing. And then from there on, you just do this recursively. Okay, and then in essentially in thermal equilibrium, what you do is the observable is computed as the trace, and you use the grand canonical density matrix, okay? So which is in here, and this is, so now what is it that people do when they do high temperature expansion? So essentially OC, this guy in here, is expanding in powers of beta, okay? So and then you immediately see why is it that even if you have short range order or short range correlations, you cannot go to low temperature. It's just that this beta is going to be infinity, and then your series doesn't converge. Now, what we proposed, like many years ago, with Rajiv Singh at UC Davis, was instead of using a high temperature expansion, how about calculating the weight or the observable in each cluster exactly using full exact normalization? Okay? So, and essentially the question is, how low in temperature can you go, and what happens if you have short range correlation? So, in these works, what we show is that if you have short range correlations, you can go to zero temperature using this model, this approach, okay, this method. So you can essentially compute everything all the way to zero temperature. Yeah.
Great translational symmetry, let's say if you choose your cluster like
No, I mean, the question is, what model are you interested in? If the model has translational symmetry, then you build all these in a translational symmetric lattice, and that's a...
But we're choosing your
clusters. No, that's essentially the point. The clusters are going to be in any place of the infinite lattice. The question is how you fill out the infinite lattice out of those clusters. So, you know, if you have n sites, you will have n one-side clusters, and then how many bonds and so on. So let me just show you the clusters. But okay, the idea is that we've used these spin models on the square triangular and other geometries, and they outperform high temperature expansions. Okay?
So the idea is basically you do an expansion in the correlation length one.
Something like that, exactly. That's essentially the physical picture. So essentially it's an expansion on the correlation length. That's essentially, that's where things will break when you go below some temperature in which the correlation length becomes much larger than your cluster. But as long as it's smaller than those large clusters, you get something that is convergent. So, but let me show you, and we've done a lot of work with that for spin models and for essentially in solid state or lattice systems, and it just works. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Does one have a handle on the error one makes? Like-
I'm going to show errors. Okay. Yeah, we're going to get there. So, I mean, maybe I should just, well, we have some time. Let me just spend some time telling you what one actually implements in the computer, because then after I will show you some results and you will not think, oh, this is like magic, okay? So the first thing one can do is calculate the direct sum of this theorem. So what is it that one does? Okay, so you have a model, let's say Heisenberg model. You are going to put it on the square lattice. That already defines your lattice, okay? It's nearest neighbor. So essentially your Hamiltonian is defined by the bonds, okay? So and then we can essentially do a bond expansion. So and this is what you do. You essentially start constructing all possible clusters that you can embed on the lattice with a given number of bonds, right? So you see, you only have one side. You only have one bond, but you can put a bond like this or a bond like this. And that's why this LC is 2, okay? So there are, you have to keep, there is some information about the symmetries of your lattice that is inside these L's. And then you can have two, right? So you can have these two like this, and you see there are two of these. And you can have four of these L, okay? And then you can build all these things, right? Now, obviously, as a physicist, if you look at this, you say, well, but the Hamiltonian in this and in this cluster is the same because it's the nearest neighbor Hamiltonian. So you don't want to diagonalize that twice, so you want to keep only once. And then essentially what one does is just use some tricks with topologies and essentially finds all clusters that have the same Hamiltonian and go and keep only one of them. And you save a lot of time by doing that. So, and these are the topological clusters. And I'm showing you here the list up to 14 bonds. There are 20,000 that you have to deal with. Okay, and then once you do that, you have to find all the subclusters of each cluster because you need to do all these subgraph subtractions. So you do all that. I'm not showing you the number, it's huge. So, and then once you are done that, in this part, you've essentially, you are done. All models that deal with the square lattice, you can use essentially what you're building here. Now, the Hamiltonian, the physical Hamiltonian you are dealing with enters here when you diagonalize those clusters or when people were doing these high temperature expansions. Of the particular Hamiltonian. So you diagonalize the clusters and you compute the weight of each cluster and then sum, compute these direct sums I was showing you before. And now let's see what you get for the Heisenberg model, which is non-frustrated. So this can be solved with quantum Monte Carlo in a two-dimensional lattice, a square lattice. So this is the quantum Monte Carlo result, okay, for 100 by 100. And if you do this link cluster expansion up to 13 bonds, you get this kind of, so essentially you see they converge up to here, and here they diverge. Okay. That's true, and you subtract it. So essentially what's going to happen is the following. You see, the lower order clusters, they contribute at high temperatures, right? But then when you subtract the contribution of those clusters from the larger ones, you get zero. So essentially the contribution of the large cluster in these regions is just zero. Exactly that, what I said here. So compute all the clusters, compute the subclusters, diagonalize the Hamiltonian in each of the clusters, okay? Perform a subgraph subtraction and add what I get. And then you get these numbers and that's what technically, what is done technically. Okay? Okay, so now, but you have some freedom with this approach that you didn't have, that people didn't have with high temperature expansion, because this, I mean, for people that are working on these expansions from the mathematical point of view, they are interested sometimes in something that are called high temperature expansion, which is this case, or low temperature expansion, and this is called weak embedding versus strong embedding on the lattice. So essentially, with this approach, we can deal with all of them the same way. And this strong embedding, which is used for low temperature expansion, is this, is what we call a side expansion. Now, if you look at it, it looks very similar to this one in here. But you notice that this cluster doesn't exist in the strong embedding version, okay? Because in the strong embedding is when you put, whenever you put sides, you have to put all possible bonds that will connect the sides. So there are clusters that are in here, that are in the bond that are not in here. So you can do a calculation, it will give you a different result. Or you can even start building bigger clusters, like square clusters, and do a calculation with this. And if you do that, this is the result you get. So you see now up to 15 sides. I mean, the side expansion gets you lower, the square expansion gets you even lower, okay? But again, you get to some point, and below there, you cannot go, right?
How do you know which ones are more important, that quite expert, and not, what are the more important than the other?
Which is better? A priori, you don't know, actually. Yeah, if you go to those papers, I mean, here, for example, there are some that work better, depend on the lattice geometry and so on. So yeah, if you have infinite time, you try them all.
Also on the Hamiltonian, and not just on the lattice?
Pardon? It will depend on the Hamiltonian, right, right. It will depend on the Hamiltonian.
Is there a reason for the even odd effect between the divergence is one way? Or
yeah, these are oscillating. It's not always the case. This is for the energy. For other case, for other observables, you just get them going all down.
You could average them?
No, I mean, okay, so this is where I'm coming now, okay? So you can do better than this.
Would you know how far it can go? Like, if I give you a Hamiltonian, do you know?
I don't know. That's true. I don't know. I have to put it and then calculate. That's it. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. So.
Sorry. I mean, do many of these converge?
Yeah. That's what I'm going to show you, the numbers, actually. Here you see that they converge, right? I mean, essentially, what do you mean converge? They converge at some temperatures and
they. If you go to infinite order, you get the exact answer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is, that's what you expect. I mean, in here, at least numerically, that's what we see. I mean, proof. I don't have a proof. But let me just show you the results, okay? Just hold on there. I'm gonna show you those results for the convergence, okay? So, okay, so but you can do better. The equivalent of Padé approximants in these link cluster expansions are what are called resummation techniques. And, you know, applied mathematicians have thought about this for a while. So the question here is you have a sequence, right, in which you sum up to 1, 2, 3, 4, and you want what the result is when you sum over infinite of them. So, and these are these estimates that people have constructed. And there are numerical techniques to do that. I mean, some are the Bing algorithm, Brzezinski. There are a big bunch of those, and they look like magic, okay? Because once you do this, they cannot be done forever. There are numerical like issues. Let me just show you some results. So you see, before I show you that things starting to diverge here, okay? This is a QMC result. ED is here so that you see that ED departs from the exact result at in the thermodynamic limit at high temperatures. Now, if you do this wing resummation, look at the result you get. It's the red line. So you are really on top of the quantum Monte Carlo result for all these energies, okay? Now, as I was saying, there are essentially issues with numerical instabilities. You try this Brzezinski, it converged much earlier. If you try to push it more, when you have already errors that are very small, then essentially this numerical derivative like blow up, and you see you start getting this kind of behavior. But I mean, the most amazing result I probably can show for this square lattice is what happens with the specific heat. So if you are dealing with exact annihilation, for if you compute the specific heat in a 3x3 cluster, 4x4 clusters, you get the positions of the peak all over the place, okay? And you cannot know where is the peak in the thermodynamic limit. And that's very important for experiments, okay? And actually, here I show you all again the quantum Monte Carlo result and the NLC results for Bing and another approximant is called Euler, and you see that we can really find the precise position of the peak and even converge to lower temperature. Okay, so that's all I wanted to tell you about NLCs. So.
Sorry. Monte Carlo, if you did 8x8, you get the right peak height.
8x8. No. Yeah, you have to go. You have to. This one was, I think, 120 by 120, and it's very tough to calculate. But remember, I mean, the important thing is this: you can do Monte Carlo on this because there is no frustration, right? I mean, I can do this now and put it on the honeycomb. I mean, sorry, on the Kagome triangular, and in those papers we did it, okay? And there is no Monte Carlo. Yeah.
No, just as you're showing 9 and 16.
Oh, because this is what I can diagonalize.
No,
yeah.
But you could do 25.
No, I cannot do. Oh, obviously, yeah. No, but I want to compare with exact normalization. That this is what I'm competing with, not with quantum Monte Carlo, yeah.
I just wanted to see where the exact results.
Right. So, at some point, it's just 1 over the square root of the system size or something like that. You converge like that. Okay, so now let's get to the topic of the talk, is how we use this now to study systems out of equilibrium, okay? And actually, the answer is already in the previous slides. So let's see. So what we're going to think in this is now we're going to think of a system that is in thermal equilibrium coupled to a bath. That's why it's in thermal equilibrium. Okay. So essentially, now we can construct the density matrix, the initial state density matrix in each cluster. Okay, is this this thing that is in here, which for thermal equilibrium was all you had to do. Just construct that and then do the. But then, at the time of the quench, we can think that the system is detached. And now you can essentially study the time evolution of each of these density matrix. And actually, you can compute the infinite time average of them and compute the diagonal ensemble density matrix for each cluster. Okay? And now you see, it has essentially the same structure that it had for the thermal ensemble, except that for the thermal ensemble, this was e to the minus beta e divided by z. And now, in the quench, well, it takes to a change of basis, okay? But this is an object that we can essentially compute with this numerical in-cluster expansion.
That's a very complicated operator.
This, yeah?
Yeah, whereas before you were looking at the energy scalar quantity.
That's true, yeah.
And so...
I am not interested in this operator. I'm ultimately interested on computing the observables with this.
Moreover, yeah. this operator grows.
I agree. Yeah, it's a mess.
So you won't focus on this object?
No. This is the last time you're going to see it. Yeah. So this is, so essentially then the idea is that you can use this density matrix in the diagonal ensemble to calculate observables exactly in the same way we did before for the thermal ensemble. Okay? Now, forget about this, and now let's go to the results, and then I'm going to show you all. I'm going to answer all the questions that, or most of the questions were made. Like, okay, so we're going to study now these quantum quenches in one dimension. It's just the simplest case, and also it's nice because we have the integrable limit. So the same model you saw before is essentially hardcore bosons now with nearest neighbor, next nearest neighbor interactions, and the quench we prepare the state at some initial temperature. Ti, I'm going to change that temperature from 10 to the minus 1 up to 10. And we are going to see what happens with that. And then always the initial t are these here. And the t prime and b prime are 0. So we always start with some state that is in the integrable regime. And then we change t. You see t and v at the end are 1. And we are going to now compute results for different values of t prime and b prime to answer that question about what happens as you get close to the integrable point, yeah.
Can you always take just the thermal ensemble initially and not just the pure state?
Well, pure states, and I'm going to have to do that for some discussions we are having, you have to build them by hand. It's some more complicated. But you can, in principle, do it. It's just work on your side. This, I mean, it's just constructed by the machine, yeah, OK? So now comes the question that we were having that Matthew was asking. So the first thing, well, I'm not going to discuss this part in here. So this link cluster expansion is done with what are called maximally connected clusters. So it's just a particular way of building the expansion. I can come back to this if you are interested. But the first question that we have is, like, we have some initial state. We do a quench. What is the energy per side after the quench? Okay, that's the first thing you want to know. And you want to know that very precisely, okay? So, and that's what I'm showing you here. I'm actually showing you something else. So now, we have the result for that energy for 1 up to 1 side, 2 side, 3 side. In this expansion, I was able to do it up to 18 sides. And then I don't know what happens for 19. But what I can do is compare what happens with all sites like 1, 2, 3 compared to 18. Okay?
The initial condition is an integrable point.
It doesn't matter. It
so,
actually.
So why can, I'm trying to understand why is it a hard problem? You can just take the expectation value in the new Hamiltonian of this later determinant state? Or?
No, but the final, I mean, first is an interacting model, okay? It's integrable but interacting. T prime, B prime is not, like B is non-zero, right? And second, after the quench is fully interacting, non-integrable, so, yeah.
But the energy doesn't change.
Oh, no, the energy is the energy in the final Hamiltonian.
Yes.
Right.
But I think we know what is saying is you can calculate the TMRG to so and so many.
That's correct, but this is better. Okay, so, no, let me tell you why it's better. And this is the plot that shows you that this is better, okay? So this essentially, look, what I'm showing you here is what is the difference to each order with respect to the largest order I can compute, okay? And now I'm showing you that, and that's why this is 17, because this is between 17 and 18, as a function of the initial temperature, okay? And now look, this is a log scale, and this is also a log scale. And essentially, you see that those differences drop. I mean, in this is like faster than exponential. But by the time you are at temperature 1, the difference between 18 and 17 is just numerical precision, it's numerical error. Okay, so you cannot do better than this. Now, let me just show you how that behaves. Peak 1 temperature, and now how does that behave as a function of L? As I increase, I add more cluster to my link cluster. How does that, and you see, it's essentially now a semi-log plot. It's exponentially fast, okay? For t equal 1, you see, by the time I have 12 sites, I have 10 to the minus 12, and then it's just error. So that answers that question that Matthew was asking. So as far as I can show here numerically, I go to zero difference, and then it stays numerical, like essentially numerical error, right? Now, obviously, I cannot prove that 18 is not going to be here, but, you know, that we essentially, whenever we do finite size scaling, that's what we assume. Okay, so essentially what I'm showing you here is at T1, that diagonal energy has converged to the thermodynamic limit result. And you see now, if you increase the temperature, then it's much faster. And then what's happening here is just that as you decrease the temperature, you see that the slope changes. And then at some point, you see it's exponentially decreasing, but the value at this side is just larger. Okay. Well, this is just energy. We can calculate observables. I'm going to show you what happens for observables, okay? Okay, but this is the energy. So, and that's why I'm saying that this is better than the MRG, at least if you are doing finite size the MRG, because essentially, I can show you later, as you increase system size with any finite size calculation, you know that you are going to go to the thermodynamic limit as 1 over L, okay? While this is going as exponentially fast in L. Okay, that's why I was saying that this is better than DMIG in that sense. Okay, so, but this is just one observable, one you have, one.
Why do you say 1 over L and DMIG? Because you're looking at the state with a finite correlation.
Right, so, I mean, so it's just one. It's just one, yeah. It's
exponentially in L.
No, it's not exponential. It's 1 over L. It's just, even if you have a thermal state.
Yeah,
it's not exponential. I can show you also some results from externalization. I have them here. So it's 1 over L, but you can ask to the DMRG guys, it's just 1 over L. So, okay, so once you have the energy, you can then compute the temperature of a thermal ensemble that will have that energy, okay? And that's what we do because we want to know whether the system thermalized. So and we essentially enforce now that we have this energy, we construct some thermal ensemble and compute the temperature so that these two are equal. And we do this with a precision of 10 to the minus 11, okay? And then you see here, for different quenches and different initial temperatures, we can get essentially the temperature after the quench. And now we can just compare what correlation functions do in the thermal ensemble and in the diagonal ensemble. Okay? So now the rest are just the observables. So, okay. So the first observable that I got interested in was this energy dispersion. And the reason for that is that this observable, you see, this is something that depends on which ensemble you are. And from the very beginnings when we were thinking about these problems, we always thought that this is something that must depend on the initial state, okay? And now we have a technique to calculate this in the thermodynamic limit, so I can answer that like at least with as a numerical proof of this. So now let me just show you. So these, the field symbols are always going to be the grand canonical ensemble resolved for this dispersion of the energy, okay? And the empty ones are the diagonal ensemble. Now these, the black dots here are when the system is integrable after the quench. And you see that they are different. And essentially at some point they become the same, but this has to do with the fact that at infinite temperature, you have a completely random ensemble, everything must be the same. But essentially we see that this depends essentially of the initial state because it's not the thermal thing. And if you go to the non-integrable, you get the same. Look at, if you, you look at this, there are differences and at the end they vanish. So now what you can do, and the thermal is the, yeah, the thermal are the field symbol. You can do a different initial state, the same final Hamiltonian. And again, now you see that while the field symbol, you see the red ones, they are on the same line because the thermal ensemble doesn't depend on the initial state. The diagonal ensemble, you see that this line is different from this line. Okay, so all I'm saying here is that independently of whether you have integral or non-integrable system, the width or the dispersion of the energy is something that will depend on the initial state, okay? It's not gonna be thermal. So that's, and we did the same for the particle number and we get the same result, okay? So these are two quantities that they just don't thermalize, no matter whether you are integral or not. And you can understand that because this is the square of the Hamiltonian. It's like a many body non-local observable. And you see, you have the difference between two super extensive things that give you something that is extensive. And I'm essentially, yeah, that's the answer. But that's good. We know that this is not going to be thermal, okay? So now let's get to the real, which are the few body observables. So we study several of them. This is the last slide of the talk, so we can spend all the time you want in this. I'm going to show you one of the observables. And then if you want, we can discuss some others. So, and this is one that is experimentally motivated, which is the distribution, the momentum distribution function, okay? So essentially, we prepare our initial state at some temperature, which I didn't write which one it was here, and you get this state with this momentum in here. Remember, there is no T prime, B prime. That's why you don't see any bump in this part that will be hinting some kind of charge density wave. So you get this, and now you do the quench in the integrable regime, and then you get this result. So essentially, the diagonal ensemble is this green line, and the grand canonical ensemble is the black one. This is fully converged to the standards I showed you before. The, essentially, I'm going to discuss that in a second. You see that they are different, period. So it looks like it doesn't thermalize, okay? Now, if I show you what happens if you go to the non-integrable case, now you see the two are one on top of the other, okay? Which hints that this is, that thermalizes. And if I would be doing hexagonalization, probably this would be the end of it. But now we can be more careful and see what are the actual difference between these two, right? They are small, but what are they, okay? So, and now comes the first complication. So if I compute, as I showed you this before for the energies, what are the difference between the order 17 and the order 18? For this quantity in the grand canonical ensemble, you get something very similar. You see, you get something that above one is just machine precision, okay? But if you compute that in the diagonal ensemble, you see that it's, they are larger, okay? 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4. So essentially, somehow in the diagonal ensemble, you need larger clusters to get to the same precision here. So one can see that it's exponentially decreasing, but it's just slower, okay? So, and now let's discuss that in the context of that other question I got before. So, okay, so now we know we have some error here. Now the question is, what is the difference between the momentum distribution function predicted by the grand canonical ensemble and the diagonal ensemble? And this is what is plotted in here. As a function of how many clusters, what is the size of the clusters that I use, okay? Now look at the result. So in the integrable case, I get something that is flat, okay? So essentially, this converges. So it's not changing with system size, okay? So that's good news. So essentially, in the integrable case, these results very strongly suggest that you get something that is finite, okay? And this is just making apparent what is, you know, it's obvious to everyone that is usually when you do numerics is that it's much easier to show that something is different from zero than that something is zero, okay, numerically. So, but in this case, it's just different from zero. Now let's take a look at what happens if we look at essentially a quench, and here it is, with this T prime B prime 0.5. You get this line with increasing L. So you see, this is a semi-log plot. So this pretty good, I mean, it's looking pretty close to an exponential, right? So it's just almost linear in here. Okay, so the difference, you see, the error here is below 10 to the minus 3. And that's as far as we can say, right, up to 18 sites. Okay, so but this suggests, right, it's suggesting that if you increase system size, well, you are going to zero exponential, right? Now, obviously, you will say, well, I mean, this was for temperature 2, okay? You will say, well, go to higher temperature, because at higher temperature, you will get a better. And higher temperature, the problem is also that the difference between the grand canonical ensemble and the diagonal ensemble are smaller. So the convergence is better, but you have to resolve something that is smaller. And you see the picture is the same, except that you see this is moved all down. You see 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4. So it doesn't help in here. But as far as we can say, it's like this is obviously converged, okay, to the precision, the diagonal for the integrable. For the non-integrable, we see it's going to zero. And now comes the interesting thing. What happens as I approach the integrable regime? Okay? So you see, now let's take a look at one. You see some fluctuations and then starting going down. Okay? But when I get very close to the integrable point, this 0.25, and I did many calculations and I saw the same, the series is doing crazy stuff. Okay, so you see it in here. So essentially, in this case, it's the red, so it goes down, it goes up. So, and this is exactly the same behavior I will see in a system that is in thermal equilibrium when you are approaching a phase transition. So essentially, as you are approaching a phase transition, there are some correlations that become larger, and you need larger and larger clusters to get results. And then essentially, this is what's happening for the quenches. So it's something similar. So you need larger and larger clusters somehow to resolve what I think is that the system will thermalize, okay? So you need larger cluster to essentially break efficiently integrability. So, but that's essentially the story, right? So we see with this XXC fully interacting model, we see that there is no thermalization, okay? For the non-integrable system, looks like you are gonna have thermalization, right? And you exponentially go to zero as you increase the cluster size. And when you approach the integrable point, essentially we see something that is very similar to a phase transition in thermal equilibrium. And these are essentially the conclusions. Okay, so maybe I go back and answer, okay?
Since you're summing over all k-modes, is there a particular set of k-modes that are contributing mostly to the difference?
No, actually, yeah, I look at n of k equals zero. And the behavior is similar, and for other observables, it's similar. So this is quite generic. I mean, it's not this particular. Well, I mean, it depends on the model, because high K, you see, if you have a charge density wave, those are problematic again, right? So yeah, I mean, you're seeing here, essentially in the integrable limit, there are large differences between the diagonal ensemble and the thermal. Right, so yeah, it will depend on the model. But okay, so these are the conclusions. So NLCs provide a general framework to study this diagonal ensemble in the thermodynamic limit. Okay, just have to be careful, but at least now we have this approach that allows you to study them. So the results suggest that these few body observables thermalize when the system is non-integrable, and they do not thermalize at integrability. And I think now we can really compare this with any exact solution that may come from the integrable guys. So we have something to compare numbers. And what we see is as one approach the integrable point, we see that NLCs start behaving crazily, which is very similar or is suggestive that one has some kind of phase transition to thermalization as soon as you break integrability. Okay, thank you.